So Brahminical means that one who knows Brahman. That's the basic point. So someone who's trying to understand what is transcendent, this is Brahman. So someone who is endeavoring for this is a Brahmana. So you can see that means this would mean that you have to have a culture, a lifestyle that's complete, that will support the development of this. So now in this there's going to be so many distractions. You're going to have all your personal emotional needs, your relationships, your social stratas, you're going to have your economics, you're going to have your need for sense gratification, you're going to have a need to know why the material world doesn't work the way it should, and actually what is, you know, the ultimate goal, what is the actual purpose of human life. And then you need ultimately then to be able to establish one's relationship with Godhead. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, you have the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. These are distractions of the living entity in the material world. Your conditioned nature is dealing with these four. Nothing more, nothing less. Bhakti is the nature of the soul. But because we're conditioned, we're not identifying on the platform of soul, which is Brahman. So the idea is the Vedic culture, or you should have a culture, that then brings the living entity to understand their position as the soul, as Brahman, and in this way, elevate oneself to the ultimate purpose of becoming God conscious. Right? That gives a permanent solution to what's here. Does that make sense? So that system, that's the Vedic culture. Right? There isn't another culture in the world that is so complete. Others deal with part of it, but they're not complete. The jnanis will deal with part, they'll deal with basically with the moksha, dharma and moksha. But artha and kama, they won't, because the impersonal path technically is not for grihasthas. It's just not open to them. So jnana isn't really an option for them. They try to make a show of it, but it's not really. Karma is their path. But karma deals with dharma, artha, and kama, but it doesn't actually deal so much with moksha. Because if you dealt with moksha, why you deal with karma, dharma, artha, and kama? Does that make sense? So the Vedic system, which is based on bhakti, then includes the karma and jnana. So so you get the completeness of the four systems. And they're perfectly blended. That's why it's such a refined mechanism that there must be many, many considerations, right? We won't use the word restriction, it has a bad connotation, but consideration, that has a good connotation. Someone's considered, it's considered very nice, right? So the Vedic culture then is designed that everybody is considered in the equation so that at the end of the equation, everybody involved in it can understand Brahman, right? From their position. But the unfortunate part about the Vedic culture is it's based on self-realization. Unless you know who you are, you cannot operate the Vedic system. Right? Because if we're dealing with Brahman, then the easiest point for us to recognize is ourself, the Atma, which is Brahman. So unless you realize the self, then you cannot understand the Supreme Self. Right? Does that make sense? Means you've recognized I'm not this body, I'm the soul. Then you can start to understand, well, the soul must come from somewhere. Where is that? That's coming from God. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is designed so that everybody in it can elevate themselves to the platform of God consciousness. But that means that realizing what is your conditioned nature, which is not you, then how to deal with it so that you can elevate yourself properly. Because right? Otherwise, if you have a false identity, then that's not going to help you in your relationships in the material world, which means that you're not actually going to be able to compare the situation properly with God consciousness. Because whatever is your conditioned nature, you have to be able to see that in comparison to Krishna. But if you're dealing with an illusion, how do you compare an illusion to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? It's a very direct system. Therefore, one has to recognize what is my conditioned nature, work with it, you know? A good example would be, say, like somebody is not very intelligent, physically very strong. For them, out of false ego, to think, no, I'll sit behind a computer all day, and that's the best thing, then they won't get anywhere. They'll be frustrated. They will not be able to compare Krishna to their situation because their conditioned needs are not being fulfilled. Right? As long as the living entity identifies with the conditioned needs, he has to deal with them. You can't ignore them. But in dealing with them, there should be some way that's progressive, so that it uplifts him rather than binds him. But operation of your needs is still the common principle. Right? Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchita. You're taking your senses, engaging him in the Lord of the senses, service. Right? You're not doing something else. Idea is, no, I'll just stop the senses. That's the impersonalist idea. Right? The karma is, I'll engage the senses, but I won't connect it to something higher other than refined heavenly pleasures. But devotional means, I will engage the senses in the Lord's service. So, but that means engaging your senses, it doesn't mean ignoring them. It's one of the biggest mistakes devotees make, is they ignore the senses. But when they acknowledge the senses, but they're ignoring it for a higher purpose of, you know, being spiritual. So that's not bad. But it's only can give you the element of impersonal realization. It can give you liberation if you do it completely. But it won't assist you in bhakti. Right? And then engaging the senses without connecting it to something higher, that's useless also. That will bind you. So you have this very nice how do you say? What's the dichotomy? Between completely ignoring the senses and being completely spiritual and engaging the senses and it has nothing to do with spiritual, with just being real, Prabhu. And you understand? So the extreme that is there, how is anyone going to survive? How is anyone emotionally going to survive that concept? Just think about it. Do you know anyone? So that's the point. No one's surviving it. So that's because we're taking it this or it's that. But the Vedic is the only path that's actually down the middle. It's the real middle path. Right? The path that's in the middle, that you can engage the senses and the philosophy is perfectly intact. Now how do you do that? Because philosophy is your theory. Your senses are practical application. That means you have to have a culture that satisfies the philosophy and is able to satisfy the engagement of the senses. Right? That is Brahminical culture. Right? Brahminical meaning in pursuance of Brahman. So in the Vedic system, this is also a misnomer, there is only Brahminical culture. There's not Kshatriya culture, Vaishya culture, Shudra culture, it doesn't exist. There's only Brahminical culture. So Brahminical culture, Varnashram, Vedic, it's synonyms for the same thing. They're not different. Because we consider them different, that's why it becomes very difficult to understand the system. Right? Particular daily applications in your occupation, of course, is differences, just like each individual has some differences. But the pursuance is exactly the same. The Vedas don't describe a different set of rules of ashram for Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. The system for Brahmins is the only one described. There isn't something else. When they describe occupational duties, then there's some differences. But they're basically simplifications of the Brahminical. Does that make sense? You know, you're focusing on certain aspects of the Brahminical. And that becomes more prominent. Well, the Brahminical is the complete overview. Right? Does that make sense? It means the Brahmin is going to study, he's going to protect, he's going to have some variety of economic development, he's going to have some way that he's engaging his senses. Right? Like that. So he does all those, but in a balanced way. But the prominence is the knowledge. But a Kshatriya then takes the protection to an extreme. Right? The Vaishyas take economics to the extreme. The Shudras take the expression of their sentiments to the extreme. Understand? So therefore it appears that there's something different, but it's actually the same thing. This is understood, then it makes the approach of the Vedic system very, very easy. But, as we said, it's based on self-realization, not on false ego. False ego is how we got ourselves in here. Mahavishnu glances, in that glance is the living entities. Those living entities then enter the, and that glance is considered Shambhu, or Lord Shiva, so it's ignorance. So that means the living entities enter the material energy, the pradhan, with the illusion that I am God. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. So they enter with that ignorance. And then if you add, so that makes the Mahat Tattva. Right? Then you have the Mahat, and it's alive, because the living entities are there, material desire is there, and ignorance is there. So you got all, and all the elements are there. So you have everything needed for material existence. Then you add the false ego again as a catalyst, then out of that, then you get the false ego. Added again, you get the intelligence. Added again, you get the mind. Added again, you get ether, air, like this. So what you're doing is you're adding false ego each time. So if you drop the false ego, you actually drop material existence. Does this make sense? So that's why it's so important, the element of being able to drop the false ego. You can do that. So nowadays when devotees say, oh, it's 5,000 years late in the Kali Yuga, the Vedic system doesn't work. Translation, my false ego is so big, I couldn't possibly surrender to God's system of social interaction. That's the direct translation. Otherwise, it's God's place, it's God's rules, it doesn't change. He's still there. He hasn't gone away. So what's this 5,000 years? Right? Mahavishnu breathes, it's 3/4 of a second to him, it's 311 trillion years to us. So what's 5,000? God didn't go anywhere, right? He's still sitting there with Indra, you know, as Vamanadeva in the heavenly planets. He's still sitting there as the thousand-headed Vishnu with Lord Brahma. That's still going on right now. Right? The whole universe is following the Lord's rules. What's changed? Not all that's changed is the false ego is so big, we're not willing to apply it to self-realization, to acknowledge that I have this particular kind of false ego, or identity, this particular kind of intelligence, particular kind of mind, and therefore needs to engage my particular kind of senses. That's all that the Vedic system is asking. What is your senses? How do they need to be engaged? What is your intelligence? What are the desires that the mind has cultivated up to this point in your being in the material world since time immemorial? What's happening today? What do you need today? That's all you have to be able to identify. Then you can make the Vedic system work. Does this make sense? Very scientific, very straightforward, very simple, very practical. The only thing that gets away in the way of practical is our false ego. That's all. It's what got us in here. I am God. And by giving it up, that's what will get us out. Right? As soon as I am servant of God, then basically we're not in the material world. Right? Then it's like someone in the that was having a bad dream has been woken up but is still affected by that dream. Right? That's the Subhagya Jeev. Right? The Baddha Jeev thinks, I am this conditioned nature. The Mukya Jeev knows I am servant of Krishna. The Bhagya Jeev, or the fortunate soul, he understands I'm not this body, I'm servant of Krishna, but he's still wrestling just with bad habits from being here for a long time. Does that make sense? Okay. So then, into that comes all these other qualities, humility being the first, right? We're dealing with knowledge. Krishna gives 20 qualities in Gita. The first one is knowledge. I mean, first one is humility. Everything else is based on that. Right? Also, in etiquette, in the culture, the first thing is humility. Right? Trinat abhyasa nichena. That's like the core, you could say, verse of Brahminical culture. That verse, any aspect of the Vedic culture, you can operate. And if you know what you're doing, anything that's even seemingly non-Vedic, you can operate if you understand this. It's the key to operating any relationship with anything is this verse. But it starts with humility and tolerance. Right? So that's the Brahminical culture. Right? Does that make sense? So now, that's the culture. So Brahmins are those. So it means everybody is working for the same thing. Everybody's practicing the same culture. But within it, some may be able to practice more selflessly dealing with the scriptural aspects of training and giving that knowledge to others. Studying themselves, giving to others, that's that they're able to do. Simply because of their particular progress. Right? So it becomes for them easily an occupation. What is needed is minimal to what they're able to generate by their nature. Does that make sense? They have a nature that will generate a certain amount of facility, and they're able to use that in such a way that it comes, it becomes an occupation. Okay? As a basically a studying and teaching. Does that make sense? That would be Brahminical as an occupation. Because as we said, in the Vedic system, everybody by culture is Brahminical. It's just a matter of how seriously they take it. You call that person who is able to practice the Brahminical occupation as a Brahmin. But the culture they're practicing is the same as everyone else. Those that can't practice it due to more attachment, then you identify them as Kshatriyas, Vaisyas, or Shudras. Right? Simply for occupation. But as far as their culture goes, there's no difference. Right? Does that make sense? So then, but within the devotional circle, then it's even more increased that the culture is exactly the same, and the occupation is reduced, that it simply means how you deal with your economics in your own family. Right? Or as an economics in dealing with the society, you can assist in the economic area. But it doesn't reflect on spiritual duties. Spiritual, I mean direct ones. You're chanting or leading a kirtan, giving a class, doing puja, that doesn't matter. Right? Does that make sense? You could be a shudra, as long as you have the spiritual acumen that you've got in second initiation, you can worship the deity. That doesn't matter. Right? Asura, they wouldn't do that because they don't have the advantage of devotional service to bring about that depth of realization that is there in the devotional application, the Daiva Varnashram. The Asura Varnashram, then they simply go by their conditioned nature. And if you're dealing with that, you're talking millions of lifetimes generally to adjust from one to another, one Varna to another. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore in the devotees it's there, but basically your morning program, evening program, spiritual programs, you know, festivals, you don't make that much distinction. But when it comes to economics and other things, then you do. You have to. If you don't, then you'll economically fail. It's another thing that you can look around and understand. Right? Because just because you're in charge doesn't mean you know what economics are. Right? It means Vaishyas know economics. They give advice. But they're not the one that pulls the strings on the overall picture, because they'll only do it for money. Well, the Kshatriya will do it for religion. So that's why the Kshatriyas then take over where the Vaishyas leave off. But as far as economic concerns are, they know what to do. Does that make sense? So in this way you make division. But that's as far as it goes for the devotees. Outside of that, it doesn't. So then, those that are able to function on that at present, then you identify as Brahmins, as an occupation, and they should be supported and they should perform their duties. Right? Because that kind of performance is much more valuable than making money. You need money to get anything done. Nothing gets done without money. That's why God, it's one of four systems. So it's not that, well, without money, that makes money more important. No. It's just like, if you don't, it's just like you could say, what is the most important organ in your body? Right? You could say it's the heart, some will say it's the brain, some will say it's this. There is an opinion that it's your anus. Because if you don't pass stool, within a short time, your whole body becomes so toxic, you die. So shall we take that perspective? The most important organ in your body is your anus. Shall we take that? In one sense we can, but from another is to keeping a balance, then we know that everything is important in the body. But it's a matter of what goes first, right? If heart stops, everything stops within a few 5 minutes, you're dead. Like that. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it becomes more important, but everything's important. So, therefore, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are all important, but Moksha is more important than Dharma is more important than Artha is more important than Kama. Does that make sense? You give up your senses if there's an economic opportunity. You give up the economic opportunity for a relationship. You give up relationships for getting out of the material world. Does that make sense? So there's a hierarchy, but you have to deal with all of them. Since you're dealing with a social system, therefore you have to have economics. So that's there. But at the same time, it has its place. It has its limit to what it can do. Yes?
Does the society naturally fall into Kshatriyas, Brahmins? Or is there someone?
If you have Brahmins, it will naturally form. If you don't have Brahmins, it won't form.
Somebody studies the natural person that you are Kshatriyas.
That you don't have to do. That's how it fails, because people will sit around in a room and do it. Kshatriyas do things, Vaishyas do things, Shudras do things, Brahmins do things.
Does
No, you simply have to identify what is the occupational duties of them, and whoever's interested, they do it. That's all. You don't have to say, oh, you're this, because the point is with devotees, you're purifying yourself. If you're dealing with prominence of goodness, that's brahminical. Goodness with passion is kshatriya. Passion with ignorance is vaishya. And ignorance would be shudra.
When we change, they start
skills. Generally, five is the normal. Up to five, that's the time when the parents, especially the mother, put in the maximum emotional input. That makes them very, very strong. Right? Then they have a foundation on which to go from.
You don't, a child of five, you don't give a choice. Like,
it's like this. Why wouldn't you give a choice? And okay, let's put it this way. Let us put it like this. Yeah, the modern school. Okay, well, don't get into that. Don't even go there. Yeah, like that. If you go back in history, I can't remember what the war was, but it was one of the British wars. Their fleet. It was very famous. One of the most famous captains was 12 years old. George Washington, I think, was 21. All the other guys, you know, all those other guys, they were 19, 20, 21 years old. All those armies that they ran, that won all those wars, were that age. Right? So that means before that they had to learn. You understand? That's the problem with the modern, is everybody's so stupid, but if they're so stupid, they're kids, they can't make a choice. Why is it they can go out and have sex? Because if they're untrained, sex will produce the living entity. And by that, then that takes the responsibility. You're supposed to be able to take it back to Godhead. So this is inconsistent. Free sex is allowed. But oh no, but you can't say anyone should do this or that, or everything should be free.
Give a choice to a 5-year-old.
To give a choice to a 5-year-old. Okay. Do you want a samosas or do you want kachoris? Would you give that to a 5-year-old?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. So why would that be? Why would you give him that choice? Why not you just tell him what to do? Because you're older, you're more mature in your senses, you're more refined. If the kid eats the samosa, go, okay, this is nice. You eat the samosa, you can tell, okay, this spice is in there, that's in there, it's been cooked enough, or you put this much stuff in the dough, or all those kind of things, right? But as an adult, you can do that, no?
There is an example.
You missed the question. Did you? You can do that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, why you would give the kid a choice? Because it's something, he's not mature. He doesn't know taste. Why would you give him the taste? You're the adult. You just tell him, eat this. This is good.
Yes, he has to learn what is a kshatriya, what is a vaishya.
No, he has to learn what is a Brahmin. Kshatriya, vaishya, shudra are parts of a Brahmin. Brahman's the complete package. The others are part of that. That's why as someone matures in Krishna consciousness, at the end, they all take up the brahminical platform. Right? Is vanaprastha a kshatriya duty? Or is sannyas a kshatriya duty? Is it something that kshatriyas are supposed to do in the running of their kingdom? Or is it something they do when they retire from being a kshatriya? Or a vaishya? You understand? So that means at the end of life, everyone's got to come to the brahminical platform. Does that make sense? Also, just to put things in perspective, Manu says that if a kshatriya of 90 years old, any man who's 90 years old is respected, even if he's shudra, he's 90, everyone respects him. So a kshatriya of 90 years old and a brahmin that's 10 years old, they are like father and son, the brahmin being the father. Now you tell me a 5-year-old can't tell what he wants to do. That's because you keep them stupid. The modern culture is designed to keep students stupid. Why? Because a 12-year-old can easily do the same job at any office or factory that a 40-year-old person can do. What's the difference? How much money does that 40-year-old need? How much money does the 12-year-old need? Right? And how many 12-year-olds are there? Enough. We could run the whole workforce with them. Right? So then, what happens to your whole society? It falls apart. Therefore, for economic reasons, keep the kids stupid. You think it takes you 12 years to learn the academics that they have in class today? Not at all. 6 years is all it takes. So that means by 12, you could be out there in the world doing things. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur was 12 when he took his mother and sister to Calcutta, got himself a job, took care of them, got his sister married, made all the arrangements for the marriage and all that at 12. That's very, very common. You understand? So this is, it's simply economic propaganda for this, so that you keep them out of it. This is established by the unions. Right? That's because you're dealing, it's another discussion, you're dealing basically kind of like a general artificial economic system where you're trying to put people out of jobs for so you can make more money. Well, the Vedic is everybody has a job because you keep it simple. Right? Right? Whatever you're doing, your sons can do the same thing because somebody else had sons also. So they, what you're doing for the father, they can do for their the other guy's children. So it can expand unlimitedly. There's never overcrowding, overpopulation, you know, people out of work. It just doesn't happen. So the point is this is the duties that are done, this is here. So some basics you must teach, but once you've taught the basics, then you can't tell me the kid that can't say at, you know, 8, 10, 12 years old that I like language more than I like math, or I like math more than language, you know, or I like mantras. Or I like deity worship. You can't tell me that? They can't make that decision? Okay, so now if you follow the culture, you have established qualities. If you're going to follow this, you're going to get more into shastra, you have to have these qualities. You're going to get more into administration, you have to have these qualities. So if the kid has the qualities and the interests, what's the problem? But that means you have to have Brahmins that know what that is.
One of the reasons why the children, when they later nowadays,
children are?
Because they're many more sophisticated. There are so many different lines of service.
And more sophisticated than before?
At 16, you get a book like this today. Different types of jobs.
But that's the thing. But that doesn't mean it's sophisticated. That means it's complicated. Sophisticated and complicated can be, but you can have simple and sophisticated. If I can give you one verse that does something that 180 verses do, would that be sophisticated? But it's not complicated. So Jiva Goswami in his grammar can give you one verse that from that you can generate 180 charts for verbs. So therefore, that the university Sanskrit book, you know, in Sanskrit 101 you get that this fat, Jiva Goswami, it would be a couple of pages. Okay, complicated. But the point is it's God's rules. Simple still works. Direct still works. That's the point. You can have guys sit there and pontificate all they want about economics. The guy that understands them, he says, do this, it makes money. That's all. But people have agreed to put themselves in the system. You don't agree, it doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So what you have to do is identify what is Brahminical culture, and what is the occupations, and what are the skills and qualities needed? Guna and karma. Right? Guna, what qualities they need, karma, what skills they need. Right? And then there's a basic Brahminical platform that everybody functions on. And then it's the specialization. The Brahminical culture, you have four specializations, that's all. And within those, then they break down into so many specializations. You give that, then people can choose. Small kids aren't interested anyway. They just want to come and learn this and that. They learn how to read, write, they do their math, they learn a few mantras, they learn things like that. But at some point, they start to think. Some kids from 5 know what they want to do. Some kids at 18 can't figure out if they're Arthur or Martha.
Right?
Yes.
There's a famous documentary series called 7 Up. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I think about 50, 60 years ago, in England, a documentary maker, he identified seven or eight children that were 7 years of age. And the documentary is based on the FNK Franciscan quote that, give me a child to the age of 7 and I'll give you the man. You have that question? So the Franciscans used to say, if you have them to their children, give it to us, just to the age of 7, because at that point, we can see that, and we can tell you all their training is complete. So in this documentary, they got all these children from London, from different classes, and they interviewed them all. And every 7 years, they go back. So they asked all these children when they were 7, what did they do when they grow up? And, you know, there was a group of kids, I guess there was more study showing social mobility, but the kids from the upper party, all these kids already said, you know, I think I'd like to be a doctor or a lawyer or this or that. And I think now they're up to 49 last year, every 7 years they go back. And sure enough, all the ones who identified their conditions when they were very young, you know, a few of them, 95% of the whole majority of them have gone through it and mapped out those careers.
So it's interesting. See, the thing is if you know what you're looking for, you can bring it out. You know what I'm saying? Modern education is not designed to bring out the individual. It's like this. You have a classroom full of 30 students, right? That's a standard size classroom, right? All of them, if they're complete individuals, how do you deal with them? So if they're all the same age, same level, same mentality, respond in the same way, real easy for the teacher. So you send in a bunch of varied kids, and at the end they come out looking the same. Like that. If you never saw, I say, think there's the song on that, the brick in the wall, right? Okay, so that's the whole point. The Vedic system is they come in, there's some variety there, but by going through the system, they come out completely, totally unique individuals. It's a very different system. Only because they recognize that you can do that. You understand? So that's why Prabhupada said he needs to want to establish a class of Brahmins. Brahmins will establish everything else. Not that they'll do it. They will create the environment which everybody else can understand who they are, and they'll do it. Kshatriyas are already Kshatriyas, but they're untrained. But as soon as the Brahminical environment's there, they know actually what they're supposed to do. They're going to do it anyway. Vaishyas are already there. They will do it. Right? The one thing you can guarantee your Vaishnava Shudras will do anyway, but it's just a matter of whether it's cultured or not, that's all. Right? You know, does that make sense? So that's the thing, is you're just providing. So we can see is that it functions at any time. It always works. Right? You know, like you can say, does it work now? You take someone, he's not trained in the Brahminical, but he knows how things function. He just retired, I think, some time back. I don't know who replaced him, a guy named Greenspan. I think Alan Greenspan. The world economics went by what he said, because he just knew what economics were. Therefore, the administrators would take advice from him. So, how is it a Brahmin is not, it doesn't apply today? Right? The president has a cabinet that are Brahmins who are expert in their own fields, and they give advice. Then he, as an administrator, makes a decision. These are eternal principles. They're established by God. Kshatriyas keep promise. They give advice. He gets it done. Why does it work? Because it's Krishna's system. So anything that works is because it's Krishna's system. But what part doesn't work is because you're not following Krishna's system. So the Vedic is to get it where you understand the maximum amount of Krishna's system so you get the maximum amount of efficiency. So since it's Krishna's system and he knows what's going on, therefore there are so many considerations. If I'm dealing with this person, I have to speak like this or deal like this. That person like that, I can't just, oh, I'm me, I just do my own thing. But then that's great, go to the forest, you can be all you want. So, but you know, you have to just consider the animals a bit. But other than that, then, you know, say it once, do what you want. But if you're going to interact with other humans, they also are individual persons with their needs that have to be addressed, and your relation, your endeavor for your needs cannot impinge on theirs. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to be considerate, right? Moderns say, "Oh, it's so restrictive." No, it's called considerate. Consideration means restriction. Right? Husband's considerate to the wife means he sits there, puts a lid on his anger, that he's so frustrated and angry that whatever he says, his wife is saying something different. And if he does that, then the wife will say, oh, he's considerate. But that's called restriction. So that's why we don't use the term restriction, because it's got a bad connotation. It's being considerate. Right? And if you're not considerate, you can't prove that you're attached. And if you can't prove you're attached, means you don't have a relationship. There's no relationship means you're insecure. You're insecure means you don't trust anybody, and that's the modern culture. No trust, no faith, therefore socially no go. Okay? So self-realization and faith are the basis of the whole system. From that, then you know who you are, you know that the system works, you know God's there. Therefore, you have security. You have security, then you can engage your attachments. Right? Because you have relationship. Does that make sense? It's a science. Right? It's not a sentiment. Those that use it as a sentiment, nice, pious, but still it doesn't work. Those who reject it and those who stand on it as a sentiment, neither of them actually get the benefit.
So what
would be your alternative? There isn't one, so therefore you just have to do it. In other words, you start with one, and if one keeps at it, tomorrow there's two, next day there's four, next day there's eight. And of time, then you have people to support. But that takes vision. Right? So that's what he was talking about. You know what you want to do, you get it done. It takes a lifetime. But that's what else is life for, if you don't have a vision and try to get it done. Right? Right. Existence isn't enough, right? And like that, you have to do something. And if you want to do something, means you have to know where you're going, right? So you have to generate an environment in which people then start to think. That's Brahminical culture. Everybody in the system thinks. They're not afraid to think. They're not afraid to deal with themselves, right? Like that. On all levels and all aspects. Those who are more expert at it, they're able to get more benefit. Those who are less, then they're helped by the others. Is that okay?
Yeah.
No, Prabhupada said third generation. Third meaning somebody joins, that's first generation, not Prabhupada's disciples, the first generation. Someone who joins, they were karmis, they joined, that's first generation. Their kids are second generation. Their kids are third generation. So third generation, you get very solid reality culturally. Second generation, Krishna consciousness is their culture. First generation, maybe, maybe not. Second generation, it is their culture, just whether they want to follow it or not, that's all. But there's no question it's not their culture. Right? First generation, oh, this one can't get along with that one because of this background or that. Second generation, they can all get along. It's just a matter of how Krishna conscious they are or not. That's the kind of gravitate there. But otherwise, it's just all one culture. Third generation will be solid in that because their parents will have been devotees. Well, first generation, the parents weren't devotees. Second generation, the parents are devotees, but they became devotees. You know what I'm saying? So just the conviction is so much naturally more. You understand? We're not talking conviction the end of life. We're talking conviction when, you know, you're trying to balance between, you know, the kids screaming and, you know, the doorbell's ringing, your phone's going off, something's boiling over on the stove, and, you know, like that. So at that time, the conviction in Krishna consciousness. Is that okay? Some other questions? Because otherwise time is short. Yes, sir.
How the Brahmins or everyone is actually interested in self-realization, that's the main stress. And then he does, and I think, well, I can't quite remember in Bhagavad Gita, I think. And the whole list of qualities, and one is the philosophical search for the absolute truth, and one is the importance of self-realization. Then Prabhupada doesn't say, but the devotees of these two, specifically these two, which the philosophical search for the absolute truth and the search for self-realization, so that they don't consider these the most important later.
Because then it transfers to rasa. Because in the beginning you're dealing with tattva. So tattva is knowledge, that you actually have the proper knowledge, the sambandhi jnana. When you establish a relationship, then with time, when he says later, it means that basically when you get to the platform of bhava, they're not very important. Because at that stage, then more important is the relationship that you have with Krishna and the devotees. That I'm not this body isn't so important because you're in a spiritual body, like that. Search for self-realization is not, or knowledge. Knowledge and self-realization is to get you out of the material world. That's where ourselves and the impersonalists have the same path. Because there's only one path, but they only take it up to that point and stop. So we follow the same path, but we keep going. So after one is liberated, then these two aren't so important anymore. You know, then it's you know, like knowledge and renunciation are qualities that are important for getting out of the material world, but in the spiritual world, then beauty is more, it's the prominent one, you know, because that creates attraction, that then therefore creates attachment. That attachment generates service, like that. So then it's important, because in the yoga system, then you have the yoga rurukshu and yoga ruda. So you have six stages of the lower and the two stages of the higher. So in the higher state, two stages, the those points of self-realization aren't so important. Knowledge and all that. Then it's a matter of practical application of relationship. But you need to be pure enough to do that. Therefore, the importance of it in the beginning stage. So you could say the neophyte and the madhyama is the beginning stage and the Uttama is the latter stage. You could take it like that. Is that okay? Yeah. Something else? No? Yes.
We hear from Chachan Prabhupada from Jared that by chanting Hare Krishna, it's dramatically available in the quality. If we find that that's not happening in our own lives, how do we supposed to live independently, strive for the mental quality?
Okay. If you independently, it's not. It's a matter of educating ourselves on what are those qualities and how to not get in the way of the natural manifestation. Right? That's basically, you know, it's like Prabhupada gives the example of you have the boat and they're rowing the boat, but if the anchor's in, the boat won't go. So the point is the chanting is going to take you back to Godhead, but if you anchor yourself in the material energy, then the process will be a little slower. Right? So then it's acknowledging that I'm the soul, I'm servant of Krishna, I'm not this material energy, therefore you won't do things that actually disturb that development or distract it. So it's non-different from the process, it's just a matter of making that commitment to it. Because it means, in other words, there's not a connection between your desire and the practical application. Probably because there's not a need. Right? I desire to be pure, and I'm performing the activities of purity, but it doesn't seem to be working because the step in between, you're not feeling it. It's not your need. It's interest. It looks there. It's got potential. But when it's my need to be pure, then the quality of your activity of purity will have meaning. Does that make sense? You have thinking, feeling, willing. You know, I know there's sambandha prayojana avideya. So your avideya will give you the prayojana if the prayojana is your goal. If it's only an interest, if it's only an interest, that would be nice. Then you'll move in that direction, but when it's, this is what I need, it's a different conviction. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is many times devotees will apply something and they seemingly don't get the result. Either they have a wrong idea of what result they can get. I mean, they have an idea, the result is you become Krishna conscious, not that you change the material world and it no longer has birth, death, old age, and disease in it. That's not what it says Krishna conscious do. Material world will go on being the material world, but we will be unaffected by it. I mean, it won't bother us, not that the things won't happen. So as long as we understand what it is, the difference between matter and spirit, and making that distinction, then we want that spiritual position. Then making that endeavor, then it'll be successful. And we're patient and tolerant, so therefore I'm humble, it'll take time. Right? Just because it's ourselves doesn't mean that it has to have happened yesterday. Right? Do that on your mother, do that on your husband, but don't do that on God. Right? We feel we have the right to, but you have to have the connection first. Right? The feminine can do that on the masculine as long as the connection is there. But when you have it committed to the relationship, you can't demand the other side to respond. Does that make sense? Yeah. We just jump from husband, wife to living entity and God. Yeah, so I don't know if that was caught or not. The wife means when the husband is dealing properly, the wife becomes confident. When she's confident, then she can manifest all kinds of natural feminine qualities that may not be overly exciting for the men. Feminine qualities that the men may not be, they may not have thought was what they were buying into. But because of the attachment and because of the commitment and consideration, it works. Then you're actually dealing in the real balance of happiness and sadness, or nice and not nice. So it's balanced then. Man thinks it's always going to be happy, but he's dealing with excitement there. He's not actually dealing with pleasure. Right? This is one of the major mistakes men make in dealing with women. They think women's excitement is their pleasure. So excitement means potential that you could get pleasure out of something. And that's so much is there. So the more opportunities the man provides, the more excitement is there. But once the relationship is established, then security is there, so that excitement goes away. The pleasure remains at its same amount. But the man thinks, oh, it's gotten less. So he can't distinguish between, he doesn't know the difference between sambandha and prayojana. Lack of knowledge, lack of training. So therefore, then he thinks there's something wrong with the woman. Well, no, now it's like that. So that, in other words, the excitement just goes back to normal. Right? So, but the point is there is a relationship where they are interacting. So for the living entity to consider that God should do this for me and do that for me and demand it is only if you as a living entity have surrendered to Krishna and are chaste and are satisfied with what he provides. Then in that feminine position, then you can make those demands based on your relationship. Right? But the feminine can't make demands on the masculine if that surrender is not there. Of course, vice versa, if we're talking social, but here we're just talking spiritual. So that was the thing. That's what I was saying, is that if you understand these Vedic principles, they're non-different. The social are non-different from the spiritual. The economic are non-different from the spiritual. You can go from one to the other. There's no difference. They're the same thing, just a different form. Right? The cauliflower subject and the cauliflower pakura are still cauliflower. It's just a different manifestation. Like that. An expert cook knows how to... No, and then if you say, okay, well, how do you turn the cauliflower into sabji? It's called pasta. Yeah, then you just make a sauce. So it's... That's the importance of the Brahminical culture. You know that, you know how everything else runs. Brahmins don't do it. They don't do the duties of a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. But they know how it works. They know what they need. They know what their basis is. Therefore, they don't mind the Kshatriyas are more passionate. They don't mind the Shudras are more attached. They don't mind that the Vaishyas, you know, make lots of money and think that they're God, you know, because they know that's just the way they are. And so then in that way, they're tolerant. Right? Therefore, humility, tolerance. Then they're able to respect them for their wealth, their position, their influence, their art, their age, their... And at the same time, as they're able to maintain their own identity. Their identity doesn't become lost just because someone else's position is different from them and is respected. So once you have Brahmins, then everything else falls into place because everybody can see that and understand, I'm supposed to act like that, but in the relationship to administration, economics, or art. Like that. Then it works. But without Brahmins, you won't have the others. Brahmins make Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas provide the environment in which Vaishyas and Shudras can use it in their abilities in a progressive way. Like that. Is that okay? That made more sense? I'm just speaking very much essence because we only have an hour past this interview. Right? Like that. Okay. So our hour is up.
Next question was the question whether in such a way there were national laws. I think it's what they're saying. There were nationals, people were supplied in their environment, but their consciousness was pure.
Pure, but also as there as everyone who's acting in the Brahminical platform. You didn't need anyone to act as Kshatriyas, right? Because you need Kshatriyas when you're dealing with economics. You know what I'm saying? When economics are prominent, you have to have Kshatriyas to control it, like that. But when everybody lives out in the forest and performs their yajnas, and they're going to do it whether anyone's watching or not, and you know, they perform their duties, and so their interaction with their wives and others is properly balanced. You don't need the rest of it. So therefore, you have the four orders in Brahmins. You have five out of the eight. The others aren't necessary. They're going on in the universe. Indra's always there. Mm-hmm. That so it, the varnashram always going on in the universe. But in Satyuga, the human beings don't have to manifest it that much. There may be some of it there, but it's not the prominent element. But in Treta Yuga, then the Kshatriyas come up, it becomes prominent, and then the whole economics, because yajna is to do these big, Shrauta yajnas. The amount of wealth required is huge. While before Brahmins are satisfied with the small yajnas. They just do their daily yajna to the deities, they're happy. But Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they got to do something special out of the ordinary. Otherwise, you know, daily yajna, what's that? I eat chapatis every day. Okay, that's easy. So we have to have something special. Because you understand, you're adding more of the feminine element into it. So the need of variety is more. The Brahminical basically is not. It's very masculine. Like that. The others are more feminine. That's their need. They're so many. It has to function. Brahmins, when they deal with Kshatriyas, deal in the Kshatriya world. Mm-hmm. So in other words, they're going into the Kshatriya, so that means it's masculine, the feminine. Like that, you understand? Mm-hmm. The Brahmins, you're dealing in knowledge and this and that, so you're dealing in mainly a masculine environment. Like that, because it's independent. Like that, and not dependent on others. Others give them something nice, they don't give them, life goes on. And if they starve to death, they go back to Godhead. You know, so their job's done. You know, the king starves, then his kingdom doesn't run. So his occupation is not fulfilled. But the Brahminical occupation is fulfilled. So therefore, their ashram and varna are non-different. But for Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudra, their ashram and varna are different. But when they match very well? Compatible. They're very compatible. That's the Vedic system. It's very compatible. But the most compatible is the four varnas and Brahman. That works. That's most complete. Then others is where you have to exaggerate something because of the attachment. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. It's not that you didn't have, because what's his name? Puru Ravas? Yeah, with Urvasi. He was the one that introduced yajna, like that, which was the Yuga Dharma for Treta Yuga, like that. So he was the king. So it's not that they're not there. Sun and moon dynasties are always there. But it's not that they're so prominent, because everything goes on so perfectly. There's no need of wars, there's no need of like that. The grains come up automatically from the fields. Right? Grains don't come up automatically from the fields for two reasons. One, the weather doesn't work properly. And two, because poor people need it and they go and pick it up. You understand? But if nobody has any need, then when you harvest the field, the grains drop in the field automatically. And because the weather's properly and everything, then next season they'll grow and you have grains again. You understand? Mm-hmm. But as it goes, then you have to start plowing the fields and stuff like that, because then... Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Something else?
No, so it seems like you were going to talk about maintenance and culture. Like re-encouraging it, restarting it. But it also seems like, you know, with the curse of Maharaj Cricket and Brahmin Sri, that there was a natural dissolving of the meaningful culture.
But the point is there's how much you need to get back to Godhead works. Because we have to understand, Krishna's running everything. You're dealing with dead matter. Dead matter doesn't respond, it's dead. So that it's responding, why will it do that? It's not the dead matter itself. It's Krishna's universal form entering it through his energies that make it. The dog acts as a dog. It's earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's all it is. Right? But it's acting as a dog because the universal form has expanded, is manifesting the energy of dogness. Right? That's the primary creation. So the primary creation is there, it's all there. All the moods are there, they're all interacting, but there's no living entities involved. secondary creation, Brahma, is where the living entities are created. They take those forms out of desire, and the only way those forms manifest is because the universal form of dogness is in it. So there isn't anything else other than Krishna and his energy and Krishna's rules. That's all there is. So it's a matter of what Vedic means, I want to get out of here, therefore first step is to see that, because that's where Bhagavatam starts. Second canto starts with that. Right? First canto is the history behind the Bhagavatam, the speaking of it. So it's preliminary leading up to it. So second canto, you can say, is what was spoken to Maharaj Parikit. What did he start with? The universal form. Understanding, in other words, how to become Brahman realized through understanding the workings of the universal form and everything I deal with. Right? The person says, I feel comfortable with my wife. What is that comfort? It's dead matter. The soul is there, but the soul is not a wife. It's not your wife. So what is it? It's Krishna's potency of wifeness or femininity or whatever is the quality is there. That's what you're experiencing. So you're experiencing Krishna, but you're thinking it's the body. So that means the Bhagavatam in its opening is showing you how to become self-realized in everything you deal with, down to the funniest little thing. The most, you know, mundane attachment is still just Krishna. But you get no credit for it because you don't know it's Krishna. As soon as you recognize this is Krishna, you start becoming detached from it. And at the same time, you simultaneously are able to deal with it in its proper balance. Because if what I get out of associating with my wife is actually Krishna, therefore, one, that separates me from the material energy, but two, it means if that's Krishna, I should deal with it according to how Krishna would want to be dealt with as the manifestation of wifeness. So what are the rules on how a man is supposed to deal with his wife? Therefore, the more I become detached from it, the more I'm able to follow those rules nicely. Therefore, that's why it says sense control is the first principle of the man. And then sensitivity. Sense control means I can control it and I can deal with it in this consciousness. Sensitivity is what is the manifestation at this moment. So how should I deal right now? Right? So these things are taken as, oh, these are rules or this, or it doesn't matter. This is direct science that's going on right now, whether you recognize it or not. And the person stands up and says, we don't care, and that are the biggest idiots around. And the worst thing is they call themselves devotees. So unrepresentative. Second canto starts with just off on how you can be a grihastha, totally absorbed in your grihastha scene and be self-realized. That's where it starts. That's second canto. That's the knowledge. The third canto shows people doing it. Kardama Muni, right? He wanted to get married, and he got married. He had kids. He had sex with his wife in 9 forms simultaneously. Anybody around here can claim that their husband can do that for him? And it's all in the line of God realization. And when his son says, I'll take care of my mother, he's out the door in the next verse. The next verse, he's gone to the forest. So here's someone who's taken second canto and is using it perfectly. You don't have, in the Bhagavatam, a better arrangement from beginning to end than Kardama and his wife. It's like the perfect husband-wife family relationship. Perfect. Right? Flying house that can go anywhere in the universe at will. Right? 10 kids. All the opposites. When she's doing her hair for a marriage, 2,000 maidservants are taking care. Right? And these aren't just regular, these are mermaids. Right? You know, so, you know, hey. You know, it's happening. So, and this was a brahmachari who says, I have material desire in my heart. I want to remove this by doing it in connection with Krishna so that I get Krishna. And how he does it, how he does, how he approached the Lord, how the marriage is arranged, how they even conceived their children, how they brought them up, how then they ended their life. How perfect. And then devotees say, oh, but it's not practical. What's not practical? It is, Bhagavatam is the most practical book in the universe. But you have to have faith in it to appreciate that. It's simply faith. Because it said, anyone who has faith in Guru and Krishna, all the imports of the Vedic knowledge will be revealed. So without the, so if devotees say, well, I can't see it, it's because your faith is not there. Oh, it doesn't work now. Faith is not there. Oh, it's not practical. Faith is not there. We're not saying the dogmatic application of the rules. We're saying the principles. Like up to now, I haven't mentioned one rule. I've only talked Vedic principles. And from this, you can get a taste of actually what is that Vedic culture. We haven't mentioned one rule. So that's the point. You understand the found principles of it, then the details, the rules make sense. But that rule is to apply here, not over there. Yudhishthira's whole life doesn't lie. He's known as the greatest person. But on the battlefield, because he's a Kshatriya, then he's supposed to lie for Krishna. He won't do it. Then what happens? Is he glorified for that? Is Yudhishthira glorified for not lying when Krishna asked him to? No. So therefore, one rule in one situation applies, but in another situation it doesn't. If you try to apply it across the board, you will fail. Right? I just heard something very interesting the other day. You know, this thing, just on a rule, taking a detail. You know, the Vedic, all the husband's the head of the family. And then someone mentioned, yes, the man is the head of the family, and the wife is the neck. And the neck can turn the head whichever way it wants. So that part doesn't come out in the pro-Vedic, never get that far. They only pick the things where I'm the controller and the enjoyer, and the culture and application, the art of it, that they finesse. Like that. So that's why they have a bad reputation, and they're not able to apply it. And those who oppose it, they're worse. Because at least the other ones, it's pious. They're trying to follow it, they're not doing a good job, they're ruining for everybody else, but at least they have some faith in it. But those people who reject it, they're scum. They're scum. Because they're rejecting God. They're rejecting Krishna. How can they claim to be devotees? It's God's system. He's in everything. Anything that you get a sensation from, an experience from, that's Krishna. It's not something else. I want my freedom, I want my independence. Well, what's that feeling of freedom? That's Krishna. What is that infant? How does it come through? You can't get it in anything. I can't pick this up and eat it and say, wow, sweet. You know? Because it's against God's rules. I pick up something that's got something that will convert, you know, at least in our bodies into glucose, then when I taste it, I can say this is sweet. So it's God's rules still. I can't pick up a chili and go, sweet. Right? Does that make sense? It's still God's rules. So that means to oppose it is the worst position you could ever take. Because you want to oppose it, there's people, why be in the community of devotees? Why be born a devotee? You can be born or be in somewhere else where people actually have no idea about Vedic and have no faith in it at all. But that's what you're destining yourself to. Very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. That's what Prabhupada said. This is our path. This is what we do. But you have to apply it. Bad application of Vedic rules will make trouble. Proper application of Vedic rules makes things work nice. But those Vedic rules are based on principles. Principles always work. What doesn't always work is our understanding of the principles and therefore application of time, place, and circumstance. So the lack is us, not the system. Right? The math system always works. I misapply it, come up with the wrong calculation. I can't blame the system. I can't say numbers don't work. They don't apply anymore. You know, it's Kali Yuga, numbers don't work anymore. Oh, it's Kali Yuga, you know, senses don't work anymore. It's Kali Yuga, food isn't what you need to maintain yourself anymore. It's Kali Yuga, might makes right doesn't work anymore. I could go on and on and on. They all apply. So why is it that the Vedic doesn't? It's such a simplistic, just pushing to the side. You gotta be really not socially mature to do that. You may be intelligent, but you're not socially very mature. Yeah. No, I was just going by over here. My phone's off the bottom. I hope. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I hope.
Tomorrow. Have any homework?